Today on Main Calling, why fish? There are those who love to fish and those who don't get why. Author and angler Mark Kurlansky is in the first category, and his new book aims to explain why. The collection of essays, To Catch a Fish, is his love letter to fishing. He describes the thrill of seeing salmon leap, the meditative nature of casting for trout, and all that goes into catching a fish. The rods, the hooks, the flies, and learning to think like a fish. He writes about the satisfaction of preparing and cooking fish, including some recipes. And then there's the place that fishing holds in history and literature. I'm Cindy Hahn. What compels people to fish? We'll hear from Mark Kurlansky and others today about the allure of fishing, as well as places and ways to fish in Maine. And maybe we'll even hear a few fish tales. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, committed to fostering a resident-driven, active lifestyle community for those 55 and better. HighlandGreenLifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum school recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. My guest today is a longtime fisherman, as well as an acclaimed author and journalist. He's written dozens of books, fiction and nonfiction, including the bestsellers Cod and Salt. Mark Kurlansky's latest book is To Catch a Fish, Essays on the Joy, Frustration, Curiosity, and Allure of Fishing. In it, he discusses fishing from all angles, what species to fish for, what goes into catching them or cooking them. And we'll also talk about fishing in literature. And we'll hear from two Maine anglers later in the show. Mark, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a big fan. Oh, good,
I'm
good.
A big fan of your show, so I'm glad to be there.
We're so happy to have you. And we do invite you, listeners, to join the conversation. Are you an avid angler? What do you fish for? Where do you go? And why do you fish? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Mark, you have written a huge range on a very wide range of topics. Many of your books, as I mentioned, are these big definitive books like Salt, like Cod. And this new book is relatively short and sweet, but it's still very definitive. It's sort of the definitive book on fishing in a lot of ways. So after writing about fishing for all these years, somehow this one feels like a book you were meant to write. Did it feel like that to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of fun. I mean, I've been fishing all of my life and I have lots of experience and lots of thoughts about it. And I wanted to talk to people about it. So that's what I did.
And it's a collection of essays, actually. So each essay covers all, you just cover the whole range of fishing. And some of them are pretty practical. You explain what different species are like, different fishing techniques, and you've got how to fillet a fish or scale a fish, all of that. But then it also gets very philosophical, and that's what we wanted to tap into your deep reasons for fishing. How would you answer someone who asks you why you fish?
Yeah, it's one of those questions. It's like people ask me why I write, you know, things that you've always done and are just sort of in your DNA. You have to stop and think about why actually you do it. But I've always, when I look at any body of water, a lake, a pond, a river, a stretch of ocean, I always wonder what's going on underneath and what they're eating and what I would have to do to catch them. And by pursuing that, I become involved in the ecology of what's going on there. And I think that's what drives me to do it.
You're sort of just immersed in nature, in this other world.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I know
And
that.
the thing about fishing, unlike hunting, is you can't really see your prey most of the time. Sometimes you can. But you're kind of hunting in the dark.
Yeah, and you write about when you were a kid and you very beginnings of your fishing life and how even then that feel, the pull on the line just kind of just made you want to keep doing it, right? So, and I think a lot of people, what is it about feeling a live thing pulling that is so compelling?
It is so exciting. First of all, whatever the size of the fish, it always surprises you how strong it is and wild, so you're holding this wild animal on a string. From the moment that happens, it's tremendously exciting. When I was a small boy, I was fishing for small fish. I had a smaller arm, but still that pull, that immediate burst of energy is so exciting.
Right. Now, anyone who fishes for sport, especially if you practice catch and release, has probably been confronted by someone who doesn't get it, doesn't understand why. They say, why is it okay to just hook a living creature for the fun of it? And certainly, there are people from different cultures and backgrounds where you really would only fish for something if you're going to eat it, and it's, they see it as wasteful. So you address this to some degree in the book. Is there a good defense for recreational fishing?
Well, I think if you do it right, if you do it with a conscience, you don't need to apologize for it. It's not a destructive thing. I do, I catch these fish and then I try to take the hook out as gently as possible. Use a barbless hook, and so it slides out pretty easily. And then I put them back in the water. I always say to the fishes, I put them back in the water, and let that be a lesson to you.
Well, actually, that's funny. I was going to mention it later, but since you said that, your appendix of the book is actually addressed to fish. It's a guide for fish to learn how not to get caught. So, why did you
Yeah, I
decide?
think
Yeah, that was a funny ending.
any fish who read these 10 points, I think will find them very helpful.
Give us a sampling of what you're trying to tell the fish to know if they want to not get caught.
If you're chasing an insect and it wags its tail, leave it alone.
I like the one you said. If you see two things that look like tree trunks in the water, be suspicious of that, right? In other words,
Right.
the legs of the angler. Yeah, it's a fun ending to the book. So in terms of your book goes into the many different kinds of fishing. There's the deep sea fishing for things like tuna, there's surf fishing, spin fishing. You get to your favorite, which is fly fishing. So, have you done every kind, and how do they compare?
I haven't done every kind. I've done a lot of them, including a number of commercial techniques, but not everyone. They're all very different in very different circumstances. And I grew up surf casting, as many New England kids did and do, surf casting for stripers and blues. I ended up with fly fishing because I just find it the most challenging and interesting, and it gets you more intellectually involved than any other form of fishing, I think.
Well, also, when you were saying in defense of fishing for those who are concerned about, what it's doing, it seems to me that fly anglers, sort of by being so immersed in the natural process, being in the river or the pond or the lake, wherever you are, and having to study the flies, that you end up actually appreciating and caring more about conservation. Do you think that goes hand in hand?
Yeah, it does. I mean, the big difference between sports fishing and commercial fishing is that in sports fishing, you're trying to make it challenging. In commercial fishing, you're trying to make it easy. You're trying to just get as many fish as you can. But in sports fishing, you're setting up a complicated equation to challenge. Like I mentioned, barbless hooks. Well, if you don't have that extra barb on the hook, it's much easier for the fish to get unhooked and you lose it. So it's an added challenge, and it's a worthwhile challenge because it doesn't damage the fish if you're going to release it.
Well, you sort of just answered a question I think we have from a caller, but I'll go to Charles just so we can expand on that a little bit. Charles, calling from Belfast, what did you want to say?
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have to say, first, I'm a vegetarian, so that's the point of view I'm coming from.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah. You know, he's mentioned that it's tremendously exciting and the feel of the pull on the line. You know, that pole is an animal in severe pain fighting for his life. So what the fisherman does is they pull that animal by its tongue. They take it out of its breathing environment. You know, they look at it, they laugh, they show their friends, they take a picture. Then they pull that hook out. A lot of times when they pull that hook out, they're taking out part of the cheek and the tongue. Then they throw the fish back in and they say, oh, I just catch and release. But you are releasing a damaged, painful animal that is probably not going to survive, all for the fun of pulling in an animal, you know, all for the fun of fishing.
Okay, Charles, thanks. Thanks for bringing that up. And again, I know that in your book, Mark, you do address that people bring this up and that there have been some degree of studies and trying to look into that. So I know you've already explained the barbless hooks, but maybe if you can address.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually not clear what degree of pain, if any, fish have. People imagine fish to be in great pain because they humanize them. You know, if we had a hook in our mouth and we're pulled by it, that would be very painful. So we assume that's true of a fish also. And it might be, but it might not be. And you know, I don't pull cheeks and tongues out of fish when I catch them.
You're catch conscientious, them very, right?
Yeah, you catch them. Most fishermen catch them carefully, and it's a myth that released fish don't survive. Maybe a few don't, but most do, and it's obvious that they do because. They come back for more.
Right. All right. Now you have fished all over the world. Do you have any most memorable fishing experience or destination? And that includes Maine as a place you like to fish, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm from New England, but, and I love the New England coast. I love the rockiness of it. But I love fly fishing in so many places in the Rocky Mountains and the Northern Rockies in Idaho. Alaska has these rivers that look virgin. I've had some incredible fishing experiences in Russia, which I don't think is possible at the moment, but you used to be able to. And they fly you in these old Red Army helicopters to these really remote places, and it's just you and the fish and the bears.
That's great.
I've seen a lot of bears fishing. I mean, bears seem to be interested. They watch you fishing, and it may just be my imagination, but I think that what they're thinking is, What in the world is that guy doing? Why doesn't he just stick his mouth in and grab a fish?
Well, I know there's one part in the book you're talking about bears and the grizzlies watching someone catching salmon that they are known to just grab it. They'll grab it from the fishermen.
Yeah. And some fishermen think that's great fun. When you try to reel it in ahead of the bear, forget it.
Not so
The bear
fun.
wants my fish. The bear wants my fish. The bear can take it. Never argue with a grizzly bear.
That's a moral there. I was hoping you could just give us a taste of some of the writing in the book because it's you're very straightforward, but it's got a lot of humor in it and just so much description. So there was one essay called Face to Face that kind of gave me a chuckle because you describe the facial types of different fish. So I'm hoping you can read that passage to us.
Okay, well, this is the opening. There are different ways of picking your favorite fish. I've established that I like the fighters. Some go by looks. Cod, which swim with their mouths open and a vacant expression, have few fans. Pompano, by contrast, have sweet and gentle faces. Northern pike look serious and intelligent. Trout have the focused look you would expect from an animal that spends its life grabbing for insects. Mackerel look fierce, which they are, with their toothy snares. Bluegill are very catchable, good-natured fish that eat smaller fish, insects, and plants. The males sometimes change colors to look like females to avoid getting into fights. The bluegill has a cute face, as does the pumpkin seed, a freshwater Midwesterner. Pickerel are sleek and elegant with big, sweet eyes, like the fish version of a movie star.
I love that. Well, that's just one passage from a wonderful book written by Mark Kurlansky called To Catch a Fish. We're talking to him all about that today. We are going to take a quick break, and our number is 1-800-399-3566. Give us a call. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What compels people to fish? Some people seek the thrill of pulling up a huge ocean catch like bluefin tuna. Others like communing with nature on a mountain trout stream. My guest is best-selling author and journalist Mark Krulanski. His new book explores the world of fish and analyzes why and how humans choose to fish. The title of his book is To Catch a Fish. Share your comments and questions. What do you want to know about different kinds of fish or preparing or cooking fish? Do you have any fish tales to share? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram. You can also give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And calling in now is Paul Guernsey. He is a fishing expert based in Maine. He's the former editor and associate publisher of Fly Rod and Reel magazine, and he's an author whose books include Beyond Catch and Release, and his new book is called Rolling Back the River. It's a novel. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Hi, it's good to be here, Cindy. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing fine.
Well,
I wanted to thank you as well for a previous book that you had written called The Unreasonable Virtue of Fly Fishing. I've been enjoying that as well.
oh, thank you.
That's great that you've connected over that. Congratulations, Paul, on your new novel. It's about fishing, of course. It's also a lot about a lot more. There's adventures in Argentina and life lessons about friendship. Why did you write this story?
I have always wanted to write a fly fishing novel, and I've held off until this point because I wanted to make sure I had a few things to say that hadn't been said before. And I had a great adventure story to tell, and it starts in Maine, ends up in Argentina. And I wanted to really use the vehicle of this adventure story to talk a lot about the environment and also to talk about the difficulties, the challenges of adapting to a changing world as far as the environment goes and getting a little bit older.
Right. And some of the main element that you include is that there are landlocked salmon from Sebago Lake in Maine that actually are brought to Argentina. So that's a big element. Do you want to just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, that's kind of the frame of the story. It's about a Maine outdoor writer, Vincent Mapp, who gets an assignment because he fishes, lives in Maine, and has written about Maine. He gets assigned by an editor to travel to Argentina to fish for landlocked salmon. Now, all the landlocked salmon in Argentina originally came from Sebago Lake in 1903 and 1904. Excuse me. And interestingly, that was right about the same time there were Americans down there establishing landlocked salmon in Patagonia in Argentina. And this was right at the same time that Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, another couple of Americans with a different program, were down in the same area of Patagonia, sometimes living peacefully and sometimes robbing banks. So I added that element to the story as well.
Well, it's a very compelling read, and it's great to hear about it. I just wanted to hear a little bit about you fishing in Maine, having you also fished all over the place. What sets Maine apart for you as an angler?
Well, Maine, of course, has a lot of fishing available. I really especially like Maine, excuse me, because of the brook trout fishing. I like to fish for native fish in their native habitat. And about 90% of all the brook trout habitat in the United States is right here in Maine. And this is the fish that evolved here, and it's still here. Still here. And I spend probably 2 weeks a year fishing for nothing but brook trout, both here in Maine and also across the border in Quebec.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for giving us a call. And again, congratulations on your new novel. That was Paul Guernsey, and he was the editor of Fly Rod and Reel magazine and is the author of numerous books. His latest one is the novel Rolling Back the River. And Mark, back to you. I just wanted to mention
I'm glad he gave a shout out to brookies. You know, brook trout is the only native trout of the eastern United States. And you know, they planted a lot of rainbow trout, and I love rainbow trout. But, you know, often when I'm fishing in New England, I notice that fishermen, especially not native from other places, are very disappointed if they get a brookie and not they want to get rainbows because, you know, this is a fisherman mentality. Rainbows are larger. But a brook trout is not only a wonderful and a beautiful fish, but it is our only native fish, our only native trout.
From Maine all the way down to Georgia, you got native brook trout, right? Yeah.
Right.
They are truly beautiful, that's for sure. So nothing to sneeze at. Some of the history that you work into the book, is it describes interesting ways that people from a variety of cultures have fished over the many centuries. And I know you include a mention of Wabanaki fishing and other indigenous methods. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, the native fishermen were extremely skilled and resourceful. And there was always this assumption made that they didn't catch a lot of fish. It was just, you know, subsistence fishing, and that's why they didn't run out of fish. But in fact, they were commercial fishermen. They traded fish between tribes, and they were extremely skilled at conservation, and they their fish stocks were preserved because they knew how to preserve them, not because they didn't fish very much. So that's, you know, that's a long-standing myth.
Okay, great. I liked all the, there's illustrations as well I meant to mention in your book, and it really shows how, for example, there was one indigenous fishing method of letting the fish kind of rise up with the tide into this pen, and then when the tide goes out, they're stuck in the pen.
Yes, yeah. You sort of build a dam with rocks.
Right.
At high tide, they go over, but when the tide goes out, they're stuck.
And they're caught. So interesting. Let's go to a caller. This is Matthew calling from Naples. Hi, Matthew. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. I understand you're big into fishing as well. What do you do?
I am, yeah. So currently, this time of year is great for the landlocked salmon. Fishing out here on Sebago Lake is one of my favorites that we do. A little bit of background about me. So I was a first mate on a charter boat out of South Portland for about 7 years, catching just about anything that you can get here in the Maine coastal waters. So we did, bluefin tuna, shark fishing, ground fishing, which is, catching haddock, pollock, cod, mackerel, redfish, tusk, whiting, just anything that you can catch out there. Also, like, coastal waters of striped bass, just about anything you can get. We did
And
a lot of that.
is this something you guide people doing?
So we take different groups of people out every day, sometimes two different groups a day, depending on how long they wanted to go out. But yeah, it's a great resource if anybody's looking to get on the water. If they don't really know a whole lot about fishing, but they want to get out, they want to learn some stuff, hire a charter boat because everybody is more than willing to share their information and just really just get people on fish.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for calling, Matthew. Good to hear from you. That is the excitement of fishing out there in the ocean where you don't know what you're going to pull up, right? Like you said,
Yeah,
like.
that's commercial fishing is actually very exciting because when you haul up that net or you bring in that line, you have no idea what's going to be there, and it's always exciting to see what you find.
Sure. Calling in now is Liz Laddie. She's the director of the Fisheries and Hatcheries Division with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and she is an avid angler. Thanks for calling, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
So, as we just mentioned, there are a huge range of ways to fish and what to fish for in Maine. Give us a sense of what is out there. We heard a little bit from Matthew about that.
Yeah, so really, Maine offers a lot of unique fisheries. We're very blessed here. And I think just first and foremost is our brook trout fishing. So Maine holds the last stronghold for wild, intact brook trout populations. And I think, there's been a lot of modeling that showcases, in the future, Maine will be the last ones with wild brook trout. So that's something we work really hard to manage and preserve. We're also the only state in the lower 48 that has native landlocked Arctic char. We have 14 populations. We also offer, landlocked salmon, lake trout. We also have active stocking programs for brown trout and rainbow trout and splake. So really, there is a wide variety of fishing opportunities in southern Maine. We also have some phenomenal bass fisheries as well. So a mix of cold and warm water fisheries here in the state.
Yeah, and I understand fishing is on the rise in Maine with more licenses sold. Can you tell much how much that's happening?
Yeah, so we're very excited. Maine fishing in Maine is really it's sewn into the fabric, and it's something that we track through fishing licenses. And there's been over 380,000 fishing licenses sold in the past year, and that's really it's on a rise. It's the highest we've seen. Maine is a destination, and we see that from our non-residents coming in because again, we offer fishing opportunities that you can't get really anywhere else in the U.S. or in the Northeast. And a quarter of the fishing licenses sold are from non-residents.
Okay. Well, let's hear about you. You're big into fishing, right? What kinds of fishing do you do?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in upstate New York, so I have to denounce that I'm a flatlander, as I've been told, but I've been in Maine for nearly 20 years. But I grew up in upstate New York, and fishing for brook trout in the Adirondacks and, king salmon fishing on the Great Lakes, bass fishing on the St. Lawrence. But I was also really fortunate. My family, we would take vacations, and our vacations surrounded on a fish species. So we would identify a fish, and that's what we would do for that vacation. So We went out west and caught cutthroat on Yellowstone Lake. We took many vacations to Maine, including Baxter State Park, targeting brook trout, the coast of Maine, targeting striped bass, cod, and haddock. So it's from a young age, passion for fishing was pretty key, and it's why I turned it into my career.
Yeah, that's really something. Well, I asked Mark this early in the show, but what is it about fishing that appeals to you? Why do you fish?
I think, you know, I love being outdoors, and kind of like the old saying goes, a bad day of fishing beats a good day at work, and it's very true. Just being on the water, connecting, listening, and obviously it's great when you do become successful and catch a fish, but you don't have to enjoy fishing. So I think that's one of the big things for me.
Sure, that's great. Well, thank you for joining us, Liz. Liz Laddie is a fishing enthusiast, and she's with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And Mark, in your book, you wrote an essay also on women who fish, and you describe how there have just been influential women anglers throughout the centuries, just including Maine's own fly rod Crosby, of course, and that today that women are the fastest growing fishing demographic. Is that accurate?
According to Orvis and the other people in the tackle business, they all say that it is the fastest growing demographic. In fact, it may be the only growing demographic. I mean, there's a lot more fly fishers, we should say, mm-hmm. than there used to be. And that is largely because there are so many women now
getting into it. Well, I'm one of them. So also, you know, you've done quite a lot of other, you've worked in many diverse jobs in your life as a commercial fisherman, but you've also been a cook, and there's a lot of good food info and cooking info in your book, from how to prepare the fish to, you've got recipes and all that. Talk a little bit about that and what you feel like people maybe don't appreciate enough about eating fish.
Well, I mean, for me, the best fish recipe is, you know, catch a fish, if it's large, fillet it, throw it on a charcoal grill, sprinkle a little salt on it, and that's it. The fish doesn't get any better than that. But that being said, I give it a lot of other ways
Well, the one you put in there on sea bream that you said is your favorite is really, really simple,
yes.
Right? You say don't do much to it.
Yeah, that's a Basque recipe, and it's a wonderful recipe with sort of a garlic and olive oil kind of preparation.
And you would, you're a foodie, so you know. there was, a couple other tips on things like that people shouldn't be so afraid of trying to fillet and scale a fish that it's something you ought to learn to do.
Yeah, it's, you know, and some fish are easier to fillet than other fish. Pike is a hard fish to fillet. Cod is a very easy fish to fillet, has large bones. You know, a little practice and you can do it.
And you're an advocate for eating the head, not cutting off the head.
Absolutely. The head is the best part of the fish. In New England, this has been well known because of a tradition of eating cod cheeks and throats. Also, you know, that the fleshy part on the top of the head is great. If you get a large fish, so you have a really large head, then you can appreciate it. If you're, you know, trout heads are good too, but you don't get much.
Well, my background as a Chinese American is that you definitely eat the head, but you also eat the eye. My parents always say that's going to make you, if you eat the eye, it makes you smarter, it makes your vision better. So we would do that too.
I didn't know that makes you smarter.
I don't know if there's
I'll
any
have to
evidence of
try. You know, I
that.
could use a little improvement.
Eat some fish eyes. There you go. Well, we're going to take another break. Today's show is all about all aspects of fishing. Our phone number is 800-399-3566. We'll go to Kelly right after this break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Humans have had a long relationship with fishing for sustenance and for sport. Today, we explore what fishing means to us, including how it's been viewed and described by anglers, writers, and historians over the centuries. Joining me is author Mark Kurlansky. He is here to talk about his latest book, To Catch a Fish. Share your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. And on the line now with us is Kelly calling from New Hampshire. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good. What did you want to ask?
So I was actually wondering, I mean, I do a lot of fishing and I actually help educate. So I work, I actually volunteer for New Hampshire Let's Go Fishing. And then one of the places that I am employed at over in Tin Mountain, we actually do brook trout habitat restoration. So it's not exactly in my department as a teacher naturalist, but it's so nice to hear you guys talking about brook trout and holding on to some of our great spaces where we can still fish natives. My question for Mark is, if you had like say top 10 travel spots, if you were going to book a vacation to go fish, where in the world, where in New England, would you go? And you know, when should we maybe hit those spots if we were looking to do that on either a weekend or a week long trip?
What do you think,
Well,
Mark?
this is going to get me in trouble for all the places I failed to mention. I'm a great fan of Central Idaho. The Salmon River is one of the most beautiful rivers in the world. Very difficult river to fish, though. I like fishing in Alaska is great. Fishing in Ireland is wonderful, mainly because afterwards you get to talk to Irish people about it.
Do you have New England spots that you would highlight?
I like fly fishing in Vermont, and I'm a great fan, a one-time resident of Gloucester, Massachusetts, which I think is the greatest fishing town in the world. And any excuse to go to Gloucester is worthwhile, and you can catch good stripers and mackerel and lots of things in those waters. I should say something in Maine, shouldn't I?
That's okay. I'm actually wondering why. I mean, are you truly saying New Gloucester is the best one in the world, or Gloucester,
Is
Massachusetts,
the best one?
best fishing town in the world?
I'm just talking about the town. Yeah, I love the
Okay.
town.
Oh, you love the town. That's great.
It's
Okay.
the not necessarily the best town to go fishing in, but the just
I get it.
a great town, the oldest fishing town, and a place built on fishing and with great tradition and cultures.
Well, always the problem in asking somebody to recommend places is that fishermen do not tell their favorite places, right? Is that still the
Right.
case? Got to keep some secrets.
Right. Well, that when I was young and I worked on commercial boats, it was the first thing they told you is don't tell anybody where we go. And this came up later when I wrote my book about the Basques and how early the Basques were fishing in North America. And people in Europe didn't know where they were getting all of this fish, all of this cod. and the bass wouldn't say. And some people found this hard to believe, nobody knew, and how could they keep it a secret? And my answer is that that's what fishermen do. They keep their fishing spot secret, especially if it's a good spot.
That's right. Well, thanks for your question, Kelly. And Mark, you mentioned Idaho. We have an email here from Bruce. He writes, I was recently in Idaho and saw a lot of fly fishing everywhere. Specifically interesting to me is the Lockse River, where Lewis and Clark had the most miserable experience in their trip west. It is 99 miles of pristine fly fishing. There is a lodge in the gorge next to the confluence of Kilt Cold Creek, named by Lewis and Clark because they were out of food and had to eat a pony. Has the author been there? So have you been to that area that Bruce is describing?
I haven't fished there. I know the area. I fish mainly in the Big Wood and Silver Springs and salmon.
Right. Beautiful out there. Okay, let's go to Art calling from South Portland. Hi, Art.
Hi, Cindy. So this is Art, and I actually teach fishing safety nationally at a fly fishing show, but I wanted to just mention a couple of ways that we can all be a little safer while fishing, and it's particularly poignant at this time of year when the water is still really, really cold. And the number one thing is to wear an inflatable life vest, and they're relatively inexpensive, as in probably anywhere from $100 to $200 depending on style and features. But an inflatable life vest is something you can wear and you really don't even know you have it on, and it can either be automatically inflated or manually inflated depending on what you choose. And there are guides every year nationally that drown who have not worn life vests, and it saddens me. It makes me passionate about teaching safety or recreational fishing safety. Another item that's super inexpensive on a relative basis is a good whistle. And that way you can holler for help, if you will, or holler to a buddy if you're in trouble or if you slip while you're waiting. So a whistle is an awful inexpensive piece of insurance. So those are the two things that I would really recommend. And just, having a plan and letting people know roughly when you're going to be back is always important, letting a family member know or a friend or somebody. And I know the old saying about just one more cast. And, you may want to, you say, I'm going to be home at 7, and the fishing starts to insect, the hatches start to pick up at 6:30 or whatever, and it's that magic time. But just being thoughtful and communicative with other folks that care about you. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you, Art. I just want to say, when you're talking about the life vest, I know you're saying, is this any fishing situation? Because it's the problem that people don't think of wearing them if they're waiting instead of in a boat.
Well, you wear it waiting and in a boat. I would strongly advocate for both.
I see.
I have friends that are commercial fishermen that will not wear life vests, and that saddens me. And, I have friends that are recreational fishermen, not enough recreational fishermen that wade wear life vests. But I'm in a minority on that, but I'm plugging away.
Well, thanks for all those good reminders, Art. Good to know. Mark, is that the kind of thing that people don't think of?
I think whistle is a great idea, actually. I'm going to go get one. I hadn't thought of it.
There you go.
That is a great idea. You said about fishing when it's cold. I love fly fishing in the wintertime in Idaho and some western states. It's not closed in the wintertime. And a lot of people don't like it, especially when, your line freezes, things like that. But the great advantage of winter fishing is that most people don't like it, so you really have the river to yourself. And in the Rockies, the wildlife, the moose and the elk and all these creatures come down from the high country looking for willows or things to eat. And so you're really there around wildlife, which is watching you. It's very sobering when a, what is it, 2,000-pound moose walks up to you.
Wow. We've got a bunch of questions coming in. Here's an email from Frank. Says, a friend from Wyoming has suggested I try Tenkara-type fly fishing. Do you have comments
Yes.
or suggestions?
I've done Tenkara fishing. As a matter of fact, I've done it in Wyoming. Caught a lot of cutthroat with it.
Can you describe it for those who don't know what that refers to?
Yeah, it's an old Japanese form of fishing. There's no reel. And it's a very small, portable kind of rod. It's great for cutthroat trout, which I was doing. But if you get fish that have a lot of play, it's a problem because you can't, you know, you can't let out the line. There's no reel. And so you're very limited to how much you can play the fish. I've had a lot of success with it. It's a fun way to fish.
Well, it's more of the good old fashioned way, right? You're just dangling
yeah.
the line with a stick, basically.
Yeah. Well, in the history of fly fishing, a reel is a fairly recent invention, you know, from the 18th century. So it's the old fashioned way of fishing.
Yeah. So more a question on fly fishing, actually. We didn't get to talk much about, you actually have extensive essays in your book about literature and fishing. And one thing you mentioned is The River Runs Through It, which everyone knows the movie, and Brad Pitt catching that awesome trout. It's so usually if you fly fish, somebody says, oh, like in River Runs Through It. But you point out that it's the book by Norman MacLean that really is significant in the world of literature and good writing about fly fishing. So tell us what it is about that book that stood out for you as far as what he expressed about why we fish.
Well, that's it. You know, there's a lot of books about how to fish. This is a book about why you fish. And it's a great story about the relationship between people and fishing and beautifully written. And I don't mean to knock the movie. I think it's a beautiful movie. However, you're never going to catch a trout the way Brad Pitt was doing it.
He's doing this epic fight going down the river and comes
yeah,
out
and there's
fine.
These wild casts that go all over the place, you know, and, you know, it looks great, but it's not going to impress a trout.
Great. There's a question here from Maggie. Are there any fish not toxic to eat? What are your recommendations?
Any fish not toxic to eat?
I guess this is with the assumption that there are a lot that are toxic, I guess, from Maggie. But basically, what would you endorse?
Any fish that's in a clean body of water shouldn't be toxic.
Right. And this is why you love to catch the trout and eat them, because they're in clean
right.
water. Yeah. All right. Let's go to...
I mean, not only is it not toxic, but it's about, you know, fish is one of the healthiest foods there is. It's all protein.
Right. Okay, let's see if we can quickly squeeze in a call from Matt. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a commercial fisherman. I've been a commercial fisherman for 45 years. I've been in the Bering Sea from Alaska down to Antarctica chasing what? Ice cod. And I love fish and fishing. And your people ought to watch Captain's Courageous with Spencer Tracy. It's a wonderful movie, good for kids, about... the old hand liners in the dory, the tub trawl dories.
It's about Gloucester.
Huh? Oh, this there you go. Back to Gloucester. So it's Captain Courageous. Is that the name?
Yeah, Kipling.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thanks for that suggestion, Matt. You've seen that too? Mark?
Yeah, it's about the old schooner fishery out to the Grand Banks from Gloucester.
Okay.
Great Gloucester movie.
We only have a few seconds left. I just want you to give us a hint of what you're working on next. You've covered all kinds of things. Is it another fish book or what? What are you going to talk?
Well, I do have a book coming out about lobster, which you may have heard in Maine.
We may have to have you back on the show for that one for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mark. Journalist Mark Kurlansky is the best-selling author of books such as Salt and Cod and The Big Oyster. His newest book is To Catch a Fish, Essays on the Joy, Frustration, Curiosity, and Allure of Fishing. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Tomorrow on the show, we will talk with Maine artist Eric Hopkins, known for his paintings inspired by Midcoast Maine scenery and for his glass work. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.